Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. We have a lot of Anchorage politics this week, and we're going to turn also to what's been going on in Juneau. First of all, the Anthony Rollins case continues to make waves here in Anchorage and continues to make waves in the mayor's race, as it seems to at times have affected mayoral candidate Paul Honeyman. Paul, what's the latest on Rollins?
He's been convicted of several rapes from 2009 to 2010, something like that. And information that's come out during those trials indicates a 2005 incident occurred in which mayoral candidate and assemblyman Paul Honeyman, then a police lieutenant, went into his office, the communications office, I guess, at APD, where he discovered Rollins in some kind of a compromising position, some kind of a position on his desk. And didn't, he said, apparently he saw feet and saw hair, but never really pursued the matter. Now the question is, that's come up, is should he have done more in 2005 to find out what that was about? It would have perhaps had some effect.
We do need to mention he had guests with him.
He had guests with him, had his wife and another female with him. Who knows what actually happened and if he could have done more, I don't know.
Well, what's happened here is that this has raised questions about was
judgment.
But not just with Honeyman, but with others in the police department of how
sure.
much bad behavior, not criminal behavior, but unprofessional behavior,
at one point,
were willing to tolerate.
Honeyman points out that he, at one point, joined with the feds and the state, I guess, and everybody on the planet, and they followed Rollins around and got him. After that investigation, Rollins confessed having 20 conjugal visits, if you will, on duty. And somehow he still remained in the department after that. And I think that does raise valid questions about what that department is willing to tolerate.
And we don't know what kind of an officer. I mean, we don't have his complete personnel record.
I don't have a personnel jacket. No, I don't. I think if any officer involved in something like that 20 different times and confesses to it, I think you've got to start asking yourself, well, are we doing something wrong here?
And finally, before we go to Steve, it seemed to me that the way I read what Honeyman was saying in the press was, look, we have a procedure and I followed it.
I followed the procedure. I don't think I could have done any more. I alerted my superiors, one of whom has no recollection of the phone call, apparently, the other who was an Iraq training police officer. So we're not too sure what all of that means.
Steve, this is now in a political context. Paul Honeyman's running for mayor. He's no longer a member of the police department. He's a retired police officer. Mm-hmm. He's given his explanation. The voters are out there listening, presumably. In covering this, what's fair to Honeyman?
Well, he maintains, as Paul said, that he contacted his higher-ups at the time and reported this conduct that he spotted in the public affairs office in the police department. So he says he did his duty there. He also said he checked up on the progress of his reports, and was assured that it was being handled. But then there's some question about whether or not it was indeed reported up the chain. It is one of the, it kind of reminds you a little bit of what happened at Penn State, who reported what and to whom, in that child abuse scandal that rocked the university there. So,
in fairness here, that this is a case where bad behavior was in play, not criminal activity.
Right. That's what it seems like. It sounds like from
Far as the police knew at that time.
Right. When Mr. Honeyman's version of the story, it sounds like he tried to get He had two guests with him, his wife and another friend, took them out to the car, then went and told Mr. Rollins to stay there in the office. He did not, according to what Honeyman says. So he tried to get him to come back. He says he phoned him and said, come back to the office and bring the person you were with. He says he didn't have any real jurisdiction over him at this particular point in time. So when you report it to your supervisors and the higher up, you know, what's your responsibility after that? Does it become their responsibility? It sounds like it should. He says he was assured that it was being handled. So that's what we know.
Thank you, Steve. Paul, let's talk about the mayor's race more generally. We're starting to see more stories in the newspapers and blogs and other places, and more advertisements on TV, and you can't turn on your radio without hearing from the candidates these days. What do you make of it as we're about almost a month out now?
It's been a fairly quiet campaign up to this point. Just by campaign contribution, I think Sullivan has $260,000 total, give or take, and Honeyman had $138,000 as of the 30-day report a few days ago. So money-wise, the mayor is far out in front. I mean, of course, he has his constituency. He has a fairly good amount of popularity. I haven't seen any polls, so I don't know what the polls would be. My guess is that it's fairly lopsided at this point. But he's becoming more vocal. I've noticed that he is using his constituency to talk about, you know, snow plowing mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And so he's, I think he's stretching out.
Okay, Steve, your assessment.
Well, it is definitely heating up. I think it's getting on a lot more radars out there. They're starting to spend some money on media. You've got Honeyman, of course, who's called several news conferences, or at least a news conference, and then he's interviewed with various media outlets regarding this whole thing with Rollins, because he's accusing the mayor of conspiring with several right-wing conservative radio talk show hosts and planting this story. So that created some fireworks earlier this week on KFQD radio. So you've got that one. You see the mayor, he's answered Honeyman's main campaign issue, and that was that he claims that the mayor has done a poor job of removing the snow from the city's streets. The mayor's answered that. At first he kind of just brushed off that comment, but now he's come back with some radio ads, or a radio ad that you're hearing quite a bit on radio, talking about, you know, well, it was a record snowfall, no one saw this coming. We've spent a lot more money and devoted a lot more time to it, so we've done our best, kind of thing. So obviously that struck a nerve with the Sullivan campaign, so they're refuting that. So it's heating up a little bit, and I think it's going to get a little bit,
you know. And the interesting thing, it seems to me, about the snow question is mm-hmm. this is somebody everybody can have an opinion on. You can look outside your window and see how your street's doing, or
right.
as you drive home or walk home, you can look at your street. It's not like, how big actually is Anchorage's unfunded pension liability?
Exactly right. If you can't get out of your driveway because the snowplow guy just burned you in, then this is like the worst winter ever, you know. So, and you want to get somebody for this kind of thing. So yeah, it affects everybody who has to walk through it, who has to drive a car through it. So it's on everybody. It's the main topic of conversation. I think the mayor does a good job in his ad where he says, well, you know, I'm the mayor of Snow City, or whatever it is he says, but he refers to Anchorage as Snow City.
It would only be better if he shot it in Snow City Cafe.
That's right. And maybe there's a TV version out there. I don't know. Like I said, I've just heard this on the radio a few times.
Let's stick with you, Steve.
Sure.
Proposition 5, the gay rights initiative, so-called gay rights initiative, has drawn greater attention. We now have some reporting on how much money the proponents have raised, and also some of their opponents. Tell us about the fundraising, and I was kind of surprised to see the involvement of Planned Parenthood of the Northwest.
Yeah, $25,000 they've given to one Anchorage group, the one group there that is proposing and advocating for Proposition 5. Planned Parenthood says, we are against discrimination of all types. We're involved in this. We've gotten involved in other issues similar to this one in other states. So it's donated $25,000 to the one Anchorage cause. And when you look at the fundraising totals, you're seeing $230,000 for one Anchorage, and you're seeing about $5,000 for the folks who are opposed to the adoption of one Anchorage. But that's going to probably change here in the very, very near future. A PAC, a national PAC, has now entered the fray, and it's going to raise some money. We've gotten some reports at Channel 2 News that there's going to be a $9,000 media buy here very soon. So that imbalance that you see, maybe a little more imbalance here in the coming days, depending on how much money that this PAC can bring in to the opponents of
Steve, I'm sort of wondering, having heard some anecdotes from both sides about people who are victims of discrimination, people mm-hmm. who run businesses or institutions who have been forced to take certain courses as a result of this. Are we in for sort of a war of anecdotes here?
I think we had a meeting with the proponents of One Anchorage, and they were really worried about there were going to be a lot of things put out there that just aren't true.
The other side would say the same thing.
Well, oh, true. That's for sure. There were going to be a lot of misconceptions that were going to be thrown out there to cloud the issue, perhaps on both sides. But that was certainly a worry of One Anchorage that people are going to have to hire counselors and this and that. And they're just saying, no, we just want, equal footing under the anti-discrimination laws here in the city. And yeah, it could very well go both ways. I think that the interesting factor, though, when you look at the money, it looks lopsided as all heck. But I look at who's on the other side of this, who's against this One Anchorage proposal. There are the folks who are on the pulpit. There are the folks who have the parishioners out there, and they can speak to them every Sunday, sometimes on Saturday. It's going to be about motivation and who can get the vote out. I really think that's the key. I don't think this one's going to be so much about money as much as it's going to be motivation.
Just described there is interesting because it's a built-in constituency.
It truly is. It truly is. And when you've got $200,000 or $230,000 like One Anchorage does, well, you can supply a lot of motivation for folks through media, through meetings, through whatever, direct mail campaigns, and that can pay off for you, certainly.
If I might, Paul Jenkins, a couple of things here. One is, do you think this ballot proposition and the debate over it is going to increase turnout?
I think it can't help but do just that. It's a mayoral race, but I think this is going to bring the conservatives to the polling place. I think it will increase it. As far as going back to what the money involved in this thing, the belief that the $230,000, they can use that, I think, to try to convince people who are on the fence. I don't know if anybody's on the fence on this issue here in this town. We had this election not long ago.
Right.
Same thing. People made up their minds at that point. I think the beliefs are hard held at this point.
Paul, can it be used as a motivational tool to get people who agree
get out and go to the vote. I'm not sure that they can. I don't think they can reframe the issue in any way to convince people, they're not so bad, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be get in your car, go down and vote, take somebody with you.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to have.
I think, I have no idea, no insight on this at all, but I'm just guessing that One Anchorage, again, can use that money to get people out to the ballot box and probably maybe run a defensive campaign if they feel that some of these misconceptions are being lobbed out there by the opposition. They can refute some of those things. That's probably the best use of that money in ads. But Pastor Prevost has a pretty big congregation.
Well, and they are already A, energized, mm-hmm. B, determined. They're going to show up. You don't have to spend $230,000 to get the religious right to show up for this. They're going to show up anyway. So it's one of those campaigns where the numbers are completely misleading as far as which way the sentiment's going.
Yeah. Once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Paul Jenkins and Steve McDonald on Alaska Edition. Paul, a dozen lawmakers are headed towards Washington, D.C. for the annual Energy Conference. Remind us, and for new people, what is the Energy Conference? And what do the legislatures hope to accomplish? And sort of a hidden question here, but I'll get it right out in the open, is there are going to be members of the public who are going to just see junket written all over this. What do legislators say to that?
Cynical.
It's not a junket. We need to do this. This is good for the state. They'll argue with you, and then they'll also argue they need more than 90 days to do their work while they take a week-long break and go back on. Anyway, aside from that, this is put on by an outfit out of Dallas, Texas. It's a discussion of federal energy and regulatory policy. State lawmakers go there and they supposedly learn things that will help their states, and then they come back. It worked, for instance, last year they went. It cost $71,000. There was quite a few went last year. I think there was 28 went last year. Mm-hmm. And came back, and ACES still isn't fixed, and we haven't any new oil in the pipeline, and taxes are still up, and nothing really has changed. So I don't know what these guys are going to do.
The difficulty with these kind of conferences, and to someone who's been to them as a matter of my journalistic profession, is it's conceivable. The public, many people in the public see this as a junket, as a trip to out of town and enjoy some nice spring weather in Washington. But it's quite conceivable that somebody comes back with a good idea that saves the state $1 million because they learned something of value that pertains to our tax code or something else.
I think these things are only as good as the people who go. I think you're going to find a percentage that will hit the door, throw their bag in the corner, and then go party for a week. And then there's going to be guys that do 24 hours a day at this stuff. The bottom line, though, what we have to look at is what changes when they come back. And so far,
Mm-hmm. Okay. Steve, you have a thought here?
Well, I can see it. I know how insulated we are. We're very insulated up here. We're way off the beaten track. So I think we really do need to expose ourselves in all walks of life to different ideas and where idea makers and opinion makers congregate in the lower 48. We in our profession, we have the Radio, Television, Digital News Directors Association, and they happen to hold it in New Orleans. Who has to go there? So I can see a real need for them to go. I don't know if 15, 16, 17 of them have to go.
Actually, Steve, I think the news reporting said there were only 12 of them this year.
12 of them.
You're right. There were that number last year, I think.
Yeah. Maybe
28 last year.
Yeah, 28 last year. So it's a smaller number this year. Maybe 5 should go. I don't know. And then they'll come back and report and show pictures and show charts and have
Listening to this discussion, I'm reminded of an old friend who spent many years in state government who said, if you don't want to be criticized for traveling on the state's money, you need to go to Fargo, North Dakota, to a conference in December. Yeah. Nobody will criticize you for that.
No.
Okay, Paul, the Senate Resources Committee has sent out with recommendations a tax bill on oil taxes, and it's not what Governor Parnell wants or admires, and there's some differences of opinion here that seem to be hardening. What can you add?
I think that this legislation is far from what the governor wanted in HB 110. It's the oil industry came before this committee last week or the week before, mm-hmm. and said, "Listen, if this isn't changed substantially, this tax you have here, ACES." Now, it's going to really have a detrimental effect on investment. And they all said it. I mean, this was not just one company and the other one went, it's not that bad. They all think this is a bad deal. The Senate is reluctant to give away tax dollars to the oil industry by reducing that tax very much. And I think that that's where it's going to be. How much investment do you want? There's no promises, they say, but the industry says without the reductions, there's not going to be any investment. And I think we've already seen ConocoPhillips this year is allocating $900 million. It did the same last year, but only spent $750. I wouldn't anticipate they would spend the whole $900 million this year. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those deals where it's nice to have the money coming in right now because we've got fat treasuries, we've got permanent fund, we've got all that. Oil prices dip to $100. It's a whole different ballgame.
Steve, how much influence can Governor Parnell have over the internal workings of the legislature?
Well, right now, I don't think he's got a whole lot, at least not in the Senate. They have their heels dug in, as does he. He wants to see deeper cuts, more incentives for oil companies and as far as the tax regime here. And they're determined not to give it to him. They just say it is a giveaway is what they claim. Now, I think where he may have some persuasive power over the Senate, he could call them in one by one and say, that capital budget,
But that doesn't seem to be his temperament at all, does it?
It doesn't, but maybe he needs to maybe that's what he needs to do. He may just have to threaten a few projects here or there. I talked to some of the folks in the Senate and in the House. They're really mad at the governor. They say that he's not really provided good information nor a lot of leadership.
Yeah, that's a big part of the discussion.
Yeah, so there's this credibility issue out here. And I don't know. I'm not in those meetings with those guys. I don't know if the governor's done that. He seems like he's talking about it an awful lot to us, and he's on TV a lot. And so, you know, what he says to them in private or as a group, I'm not sure. If they don't know that this is a top priority to the governor by now, I don't know what he's going to have to say to them to convince them of that. But I think the one bit of leverage he will have is when it comes to capital budget time. And either that or just sit down and, okay, well, let's come up with a compromise. But right now,
I don't see compromise. Well, and then there's the whole question here, right, Steve, that if you're some people in the industry in Parnell might be thinking, you know, next year the legislative deck is going to be shuffled. Maybe we can get a better deal. But certainly at the present time, they'll push as hard as they can.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an election year, so that kind of, you know, produces all kinds of crazy emotions as well. So, but if you come back to your district in election year and you say, well, you know, how we wanted to build that really neat intersection and make it say, well, the governor kind of torpedoed that because I was against the, you know, it goes a lot better for your reelection, I think, if you can come back and say, look, I got lots of money.
And they are working on that. Yeah. Paul, the Republicans of Alaska caucus this week to pick their choice of a presidential nominee for their party. Drum roll. How'd it go and who won?
Mitt Romney got the most.
Yeah.
But they all got some.
They all got some, yeah.
This is not a winner-take-all situation up here. So they split votes. I'm thinking Romney and Santorum got the most. Mm-hmm. Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich didn't get so many. We were in the national press for about 14 seconds. And then they moved on to something else. So essentially, Tom Brennan suggests we make this a winner-take-all thing. I think he's right. At least we would get maybe a minute, maybe mm-hmm. two. You never know. So,
they're hasn't splitting the Republican Party nationally been discouraging the winner-take-all?
Well,
some states still have it.
We have 23 delegates that are now divided up among four people, and three GOP delegates can do whatever they want.
This is where the moment on national television where the spokesman at the convention says, and the great state of Alaska, home of, and lists a whole lot of people, cast 3.7 votes for.
That's right.
Steve.
Yeah. I think it would be, everybody got something.
Everybody got something.
It was just, it was sort of like Christmas. You get a present, you get some. And
and the turnout was about the same as in previous last 4 years ago. I think it was like 14,000. I didn't see the final turnout.
Yeah, a lot of interest in it. I think it should be a winner-take-all thing.
Okay, I wanted to add something myself here since we have a little time. On Sunday night, I attended the Ron Paul rally at the Denina Center. I'll be in 1,250 of my best friends. And I must say that Dan Joling of the Associated Press really deserves kudos here because he went in and counted all the chairs, which were 1,065, I believe, and then did the estimate of how many people were standing. And people were coming and swirling all the time. So it was quite a turnout. And the people who got in the front rows got there very early. The striking thing to me was Paul came out. He was wearing a slacks or trousers and a bright red shirt. You couldn't miss him. And it actually looked like he'd worn that shirt before and perhaps even washed it. Most of the candidates, Romney famously and John Kerry, the Democrats famously, have, you know, they look like they just bought the shirt on the way to the meeting. But he didn't look like that at all. He was able to talk to people in a very easy conversational manner. I mean, it was his standard stump speech. And it was, we're going to get government out of your lives. We're going to bring the troops home. We're going to get, isn't it about time we got rid of the Federal Reserve? People go wild. Isn't it about time that we go back to the gold standard? People like that too. He didn't talk about things that, like, I'm going to legalize marijuana. I'm going to get rid of the Center for Disease Control. I went on Iranian television and talked about what's wrong with national policy, American national policy. He didn't talk about any of those things. But he was well received, and I thought he was better received at this meeting or this giant rally than I thought it would be reflected in the turnout at the the polls. But it wasn't, and it may be that really took me a couple days to realize this. A lot of people who go to see Ron Paul are not Republicans and don't want to register to become Republicans even for one day on election day.
Yeah. You know, I think you would agree too with this, Paul and Michael. There's nobody more dedicated to their candidate than Ron Paul supporters.
Holy
cow. They call like all the time. They call the newsroom. You come into this
event, to remind you what you're doing wrong.
Oh yeah. Oh, and that too. Yeah. So, but they're fanatical about their guy, and that's great. So yeah, I really thought that Ron Paul would. I thought he'd win this thing for sure.
I thought he'd do much better than
we only have about a minute, Steve, but Lisa Murkowski returned from Washington last weekend and heard near fill from Alaska women.
Yeah, she sure did. And it all stemmed over this, the health care bill and funding of contraception. She felt that she was sending a message for religious freedom by voting to allow religious organizations, churches and church-run organizations, like hospitals
and others as well,
allowing them to they could opt out of this provision that providing contraception to for workers. Women took it as an anti-contraception vote, and she really did get an earful. Julie O'Malley did a great job of writing a column in the Anchorage Daily News earlier this week, capturing what the conversation was
and
like.
And Murkowski herself said, "I think I made a mistake."
She did. Yeah. She did definitely admit she made a mistake and she shouldn't have voted that way. She thought it was a religious question. Women took it as a contraception.
Paul,
question.
Steve, and our many viewers, there's no mistake here. We are out of time. Thank you for joining us on Alaska Edition. We'll see you right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.